We've altered our schedule a tad this week. We missed our guest yesterday, but we've now got him live on the line from Vegas. You can find his work for the Register Guard. Well, try the cover of the sports section online, registerguard.com, on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are things in Sin City?
Things are always better in Vegas, aren't they?
You're really preaching to the choir there. I forget, if memory serves correctly, when we talked about Vegas last time, do you abstain from the degeneracy, or do you kind of wade in maybe to the tables or the sports book?
I would say I dip a toe in the water. I will spend a little time at the sports book while I'm here. I'm certainly not a high roller by any stretch of the imagination. Usually, if I can break even over the course of 2 or 3 days, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. But certainly not a high roller.
So you don't go upstairs, put on the special tuxedo you brought, and join James Bond in the Baccarat room for high rollers?
No, I think that's Steve. That's a little more Steve's scene than mine.
All right. Well, thank God somebody's repping us there. Now, you did the double dip in Seattle last week, where the men beat the Huskies, the women won the conference tournament title. But you also were there when Conference Commissioner Larry Scott chatted. And this one-and-done rule seems to be on the front of a lot of people's minds. Once upon a time, if a guy went like Daryl Dawkins from high school to the pros, he was called a hardship. Then we got Garnett and LeBron. So I guess kind of mix and match here what his thoughts are and maybe what yours are, if this should stick or be eliminated.
Well, the Pac-12 has commissioned a task force that is investigating some of these issues in college basketball, and we certainly can debate the efficacy of a task force in accomplishing anything. Usually it just amounts to a lot of studying and nothing actually getting done. But one of the recommendations they're going to make, which then will be part of a bigger task force commissioned by the NCAA, is to ask the NBA to revisit the one-and-done rule. And I actually think there's some momentum for this. If you pay attention to what Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, has been saying about it, I think the NBA is actually open to it. And I think it's time. I think it would be the right thing. I think what the schools are saying is that college basketball shouldn't be a place for guys who have absolutely no interest in being there. If you want to go to college, great. Take a scholarship. Play college basketball. If you don't want to be there, there should be another pathway. And I think both sides are open to creating that pathway, and I think that would be a good thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that arena as well. But another issue that surfaced, Steve Kerr, the Golden State Warrior coach, in dealing with college players who say, well, I want to be eligible for the draft, and I don't really want to participate in the cutoff date if I don't hire an agent and I don't get drafted. What about, okay, just go back to square one and you could return to school? Does that make any sense, or do you kind of need that timeline?
I don't see why, and maybe there's a reason that I'm not thinking of right now, but I don't see why college basketball couldn't be like college baseball, where you recruit players, players sign, but if they get drafted in a certain place and they like where they're drafted, they can sign with a professional team. You know, college baseball coaches are used to that every year with some degree of uncertainty about guys they recruit, whether they're going to go to the draft or whether they're going to come to school. I think that could work in college basketball. You know, maybe the coaches would complain about that degree of uncertainty. You know, they would want players to declare their intentions before the draft, but I think it makes sense. Let guys enter the draft if they want to. You know, maybe some guys, when they're 17 or 18 years old, maybe they don't have a very realistic perception of what their stock is like.
Right.
So they want to put their name in the draft, and when they go undrafted, they're surprised by it. But that's the wake-up call to them that says, okay, I need to go to school for a year or two and develop. I don't think that would be a bad thing.
No, it seems like there's an element of logic, which, you know, usually rules out the NCAA. But talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, let's get to the Oregon men. awful loss to the Cougs, beat Washington. They're about 68-70 in the RPI. You know, you look at the UConn loss, the home loss to USC, those gut punch defeats down at Southern California. I don't know, is this oversimplifying it, but are they going to most likely look at this as their year of what might have been?
Well, you certainly can look back at a number of moments and say, if a few of those had gone differently, they would be in a completely different position. If they take care of business against UConn and Washington State and Oregon State, those three really bad losses would come off their resume, and it would look a lot different. You also could point to the games against the Southern Cal schools. They've had opportunities. Now, that's the story of every team that's on the wrong side of the bubble right now.
Right.
They all can point to five or six games that could have gone the other way. So in a way, it's kind of a loser's lament, I guess, to look back at all these missed chances. But you know, this team has just been so inconsistent, and that was Dana Altman's point going into the tournament. The most frustrating thing about this team is they've shown that they can play with the best teams in the league. They beat Arizona at home, but they've also shown that they can lose to the worst teams in the league, and that's a recipe for a frustrating season.
Now, along those lines, you wrote about this tournament, even with the return of Trier and Sean Miller. Arizona, not invincible. ASU is just a different team. They lost again today. The Huskies have been blown out multiple times. There's just one top 30 team. And I think you mentioned it's kind of run true to form. The regular season was a real big indicator of what we would see this week. So I guess now with ASU out, how wide open is this? Maybe the biggest that you've witnessed?
I was surprised to learn that the last 2 years there's only been two upsets according to the seeds. The tournament really has gone according to the seeding the last 2 years, and I do think it'll be different this year. I think we are going to see some upsets. I wouldn't be surprised if a team that is playing today ends up playing for the championship, whether that's Colorado, which looked really good and beat Arizona State earlier today. It could be Oregon, could be Beavers, could be Washington. I just think this is a year when somebody's going to get hot and go on a run, because Arizona is the favorite. I don't think Arizona is as dominant as they've been. And the seeds 2 through 5 definitely are not as good as they've been. So I don't think there's much separation at all between a team like USC, which is the 2 seed, and a team like Oregon or a team like Stanford, a team like even Colorado. I think it's really wide open.
Now, you wrote an article about this Duck team in this tournament and kind of the way it opened. You said, hard to have faith if they're up 10, a $10 bet, or an open 10-footer. And it's kind of funny because last night, a friend of mine who was leaving town and said he's not going to be back until Sunday, and if I told him they lost to the Cougs tonight or won the thing, he'd be like, I'd have the exact same reaction. So have you seen enough to kind of be of that philosophy? They could go quick, or when they put their best foot forward, what the hell? They could end up winning the thing.
Yeah, I think that's true of every team in this tournament, maybe outside of Cal, which is on its way out.
Yep.
I thought, and maybe outside of Washington State, I don't think Washington State's going to make a long run, even though they have been playing better. But outside of those last two, I think you could say that about every team in this tournament, that they could lose on the first day, or they could get hot and they could go all the way to the championship game. And I do think Oregon's path sets up pretty good. If they win tonight, then they would get Utah. I don't think that's certainly an insurmountable task for Oregon. Then you'd be looking at USC, which USC without Boatwright I don't think is an insurmountable task. So
sure.
I think the path is there that Oregon could be that team that could get hot and go all the way to the title game. But I'm with your buddy. I wouldn't be shocked if they lose tonight either.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. Let's get over to the women. Beyond the title in Seattle and the performance of Ionescu, I want to talk about Satu Sabally. In general, you see a 6'4" women's player. She's probably a post at UConn or Stanford, or plays a role like Molly Maguire of the Ducks, you know, rebound, set picks, defend the post. And while she's been inconsistent, you've seen her play many times in person. How unique or potentially dynamic of a player has she been, and certainly will be?
I think unique is probably the right word, because you don't see very many players like her in college basketball. At her size and her height, she's so smooth as she steps out and she shoots it. You know, I think in some ways she's still adapting to the American game, you know, and the physicality of it, and how tough you have to be to play college basketball at this level. But the skills are just off the chart, and the physical tools are incredible. She's a real weapon. You know, when you put her in that lineup with the other players around her, it's nice to have a player, you know, who brings that unique skill set of that size, who can step out and shoot it and put it on the floor. And her skill level is a really unique weapon to have.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about this program year four under Kelly Graves. You got a great staff, Jody Berry. But, you know, the bottom line is they were coming along nicely. They made the WNIT run. But the bottom line is they were under 500 in the conference just a year ago. Then they got hot. So to kind of isolate, how amazing is it what they've done in essence the past 11 and a half months, where all of a sudden they win the conference tournament? You got Rebecca Lobo on ESPN saying they might make the Final Four.
Yeah, well, if you take the NCAA tournament from last year and tack it on to what they've done so far this season, that's a heck of a run. You know, going back to beating Duke and Maryland last year. Now this year, they sweep UCLA. They beat Stanford in the title game of the Pac-12 tournament. You know, their only losses, going back to the NCAA tournament last year, let's see, UConn.
Yeah.
They lost to Mississippi State, which was undefeated until last week. They lost to
Louisville,
the other team, which is probably going to be a one seed. They lost to Oregon State, who's been a top-tier program for the last 3 or 4 years, and they lost to Stanford. So to go a calendar year, and those are the only teams that you lose to, that's a pretty significant accomplishment.
No question about it. And the two that you mentioned, Mississippi State and Louisville, were true road games at top five teams. Amazing.
Yes.
So you've seen a lot of big-time games, be it Kansas basketball, all the great college football, major conferences, BCS bowl games. But when you consider what was at stake here, a first-ever Pac-12 tournament title, let's face it, Stanford is a nemesis. They're the standard setter in this league. How about that performance by Sabrina Ionescu on Sunday? I mean, just that's pretty historic.
Yeah, that was as good as any performance I think I've seen in a championship game setting. The way she just dominated that game, and I don't think the stats even tell the whole story. She had 36 points, but to me, there was still something that you didn't really appreciate unless you saw it in person. Just the way she was playing at a different speed than everybody else on the court. It's like she was playing a different game. She's always super intense. She's always pretty much the most intense player on the court, but she even has a level that she can kick it up to in a big game, and she definitely brought it in that game. She was just dialed in from the opening tip-off till the final buzzer, just relentless. You know, she's just relentless. She never stops on the court.
No, we were joking that she's the one who's going to kick over the checkerboard if you beat her, and you just want to stay out
exactly,
of her way.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to...
Yeah, well, hey, remind her that UConn was the team that beat them last year. If they see UConn again, you know, if we get that version of Sabrina in a UConn rematch, that that could be interesting.
I have a feeling that she is the white whale queen. She likes to conquer those. I'll let you get back to this scintillating Bay Area battle in Vegas. Then, of course, you got the Oregon schools versus the Washington schools. Folks, he's Austin Meek of the Register Guard on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Appreciate the time. Wishing you safe travels and, I guess, good fortune. And we'll catch up next week.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Take it easy.